Postman! Postman, come here! Tell the neighborhood!
What
a shanda, Larry! Larry David!
Not
only are you a lousy Jew, but you're a lousy human being!
He screws the wife of a man in a wheelchair! A shanda!
Maybe you should have given me some candy!
You're a lousy Jew!
All right, we're going to get to the postman in just a second. But before we do so, we have a special guest joining us today, fresh off not just episode 6, but episode 5 of Curb. We have Himson Chan, who plays the, I think, unnamed waiter at the Chinese restaurant. Also a big fan of theater. So, Himson, welcome to Pretty Good. Does your character have a name?
Yeah, actually, he technically does. And hello to all the listeners. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, actually, that was part of one of the improv things that we kind of, one of those paths went down. There is a scene that got cut that Vince Vaughn, me and him are kind of going back a little bit. And he asked me, like, what is your name anyways? And I like kind of came up with the name just on the spot, Lo Wai. And if you say it enough times, it starts to sound like Lo Wai, Lo Rai, Lo Rai, Larry. Like,
oh, I see.
It's kind of like the Chinese equivalent of Larry, and that's where I kind of drew a lot from the character, was kind of being the Asian version of Larry and being kind of stuck in his ways and trying to, just kind of work along with that. But yeah, technically he has a name, and that's just kind of something we came up with on the spot, but it never got explicitly mentioned in the episode. And so I guess that's why on IMDb, I'm just kind of credited as Chinese restaurant waiter.
Yeah, he is the Larry in the sense that he's unwilling to bend at all. Although I love going back to Fish Stuck, your first episode, you have this really intense fight with Larry back and forth. And then you end it with a smile. You're like, all right, I'll bring drinks to the table. Like, you're like totally cool. You don't hold a grudge at all. Which
no,
was
absolutely.
Like a laugh out loud moment there.
No, thank you for that. That was just kind of in the moment where I feel like that's where he went into waiter mode. Like, when he's like, all right, I still have a job to do. I hate this guy.
Yeah.
As much grief as he's putting me through, I still got a job to do. So, then that's why I just thought it'd be kind of funny to have a kind of twist at the end where I'm not taking this personally.
He doesn't mix business and pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to ask, but let's be honest here. You are gaslighting Larry, right? There's no way that fish went to the downtown restaurant.
I don't know. I feel like in my mind, that fish really is sick. Yeah. But then, no, part of that kind of subtext was that I did, like, my job's on the line. So if my boss finds out that this fish is stuck, it's on my head. So yeah. I'm just trying to convince everybody. Maybe not Larry, maybe my boss too.
He wasn't stuck. He was sick. He was sick. We sent him downtown,
exactly.
Boss. Yeah.
I'm not liable. Anymore. It's not my responsibility.
Yeah. Now, I don't even know if you know this, Himson, but we also, during the, you know, so we were a Curb podcast. We started in January of 2020. We went through all the episodes. We have finished that. And then since then, we look for other things to do. So one of the other things that we've covered is I Think You Should Leave. And you were on, weren't you surfing on the table on I Think You Should Leave, right?
I was, yeah. I played the character Paul on one of the sketches, yes. Season 2. Yep. And that was, I love that you brought that up, because kind of talking about the absurdity of these scenarios with Larry, I drew a lot from my experience working on I Think You Should Leave into that character of Lo Wai, in that it's insane that I think that a fish is sick, but he will go to to all lengths and like to no end of trying to prove that he's right. And that's kind of what I think Tim Robinson does so well on his show. Yeah. It's just like, just so crazy, but it's so grounded, and in his mind he has to prove that he's right no matter what the cost.
Yeah, that is very similar, you know, very much in the same ethos as Curb, like the Larry, like doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on like the pettiest like argument with somebody just to not admit that he was wrong about something a week ago. Like, he'll go through hoops so that way just so this person won't like who cares? Like, you're a billionaire. Like, go on with your life.
exactly,
like,
yeah.
That's very much right. You know, like Tim Robinson refusing to admit that he's pulling the door the wrong way. And, you know, just all of the, you know, that's like a third of the sketches are basically.
Yeah. No, one of my, like, all-time favorite Tim Robinson sketches was that was the hot dog one. Where,
yeah.
Like, a hot dog car crashes into a clothing store. No one knows who it is except then you come across this guy in a hot dog suit. It's like, well, obviously it's him, but the lengths he goes to explain that it's not, it's so funny.
Yeah. And so perfectly applicable to like our online political discourse these days. So let's take a step back. Tell us how you got cast onto Curb in the first place as the waiter.
Sure.
Here in first in Fish Stuck. And then coming back, did you know initially that it was going to be a multi-episode arc?
No, actually, I thought I was just going to be in episode 5, but I mean, shout out to showrunner Jeff Schaefer. We just had so much fun on set, and they thought that I had really great chemistry with Larry that they're like, let's bring him back for another episode. Because originally, in episode 6, Larry just kind of trips over the coat, but they thought it'd be kind of a natural, it made sense to have a foot stuck because it's so really, so close to fish stuck. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be fun to do that as a callback to episode 5. So yeah, originally I thought it was just going to be one episode, but we had so much fun, they brought me back for more.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I follow very closely, like, who's going to be on the show and, like, what's coming up. And I saw they're like, Himson Chan cast as, like, a 2-episode arc as Larry's nemesis. I was like, ooh, interesting. Like, you know, just, like, it's pretty rare in Curb for there to be, like, it's like someone to come in just for, like, 2 episodes. Like, usually it's 1 episode or it's, like, 5+ episodes, right? Like,
exactly, yeah.
There's not a lot of, like, 2-episode arcs in Curb.
No, I was definitely very honored to be back. I love Dana as Mr. Takahashi, how he just kind of pops in and out of all these different episodes. I was like, oh, maybe, I mean, obviously this was before we knew that this was going to be the final season. So I was like, oh, maybe there's opportunity to come back later on and keep popping back up, being kind of this quote unquote nemesis. Because, yeah, the characters get on each other's nerves so much that I think it's just so fun to watch at the same time.
You should know that all the people you're mentioning, you're now in a common club with them, that both, you know, you and Jeff Schaefer and Mr. Takahashi, Dana Lee, have all been pretty, pretty, pretty good guest stars. So you're an elite company.
That's how I know I've made it now, just from this moment, because we've all done the same pod. I know I've made it in Hollywood.
That's right. You're going places.
Oh, yeah. So tell us, how did you get cast onto the show?
Sure. It was actually a really quick process. I got the audition on a Saturday afternoon, had to turn in a tape by Monday. So it was like less than 48 hours. Normally we have like a couple days to go through it. And especially with Curb, because it is so improv based, we're not getting scripts like we normally would, where we get every line, every beat mapped out for us. Whereas instead with Curb, the audition process, we got essentially just a one sentence scenario for our character. And then for each scene, we got like a beginning and an end. So it's up to us to kind of figure out how we get to point A to point B. I mean, obviously they do have like certain points they want us to hit, because that's the through line through the entire season, that honestly, I only know what happens in my episode, but they have important points that they want to hit that affects, say, the finale. So then I started putting the pieces together and just having fun with that. And I turned in my audition on a Monday. And literally 2 days later, I found out I booked the role. Actually, I found out I got a call from my manager in the middle of my birthday dinner. And she's like, oh, happy birthday. And by the way, you booked Curb. I was like, what? And I was just, I didn't even care it was my birthday. Like, this is like the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And I was just like so excited. And that just absolutely, I mean, it's going to be really hard to top that birthday gift the rest of my life. But yeah, it happened real quick and it was just so much fun.
That's awesome. So I think you've done like improv in the past, right? Like this is not your first rodeo. What is, I guess, different about the way Curb does improv from other scenarios? How is it the same? Like what was it like doing it in the Curb style?
I think with doing the Curb style of improv, like I used to train improv through Upright Citizens Brigade here in LA. That was one of the first improv schools I went to when I moved here, and just kind of learning the game of what is going to drive the scene forward and applying that to Curb. It's really interesting because it's one thing to do like an improv exercise with just a random dude in your class, but when you're looking across the table with like Vince Vaughn, Larry David, JB Smooth, even Richard Lewis, rest in peace, like it's just, you're in awe of these people. So the hardest part is just not kind of crumbling under that pressure, just having fun. And everyone was so supportive on that set. So literally we would just riff, and like Vince could go on for an hour, probably just whatever tangent he could go off on. But just trying to find my way into those conversations, seeing how I can push them to their limit. Like kind of the game I had in my head was like, how crazy can I make this? Kind of that Tim Robbins thing. Like, but still keeping it grounded. And I'm pushing like Larry to how much is he going to believe? Like, how much is he going to take? Like, in his mind, he knows a fish is stuck. But it's like, right. How can I convince him, no matter how crazy it gets?
Right. He's got to, like, dig in and be believable as someone who is just is willing to dig in.
Exactly, yeah. And sometimes, I admittedly, I do go a little too crazy. And, like, and Larry's a great sport. He just goes with it until Jeff calls cut. And then I knew, I was like, all right, that I went a little off the rails there. And Larry's just like, yeah, that's a little bit too crazy. Let's dial it back down a little bit. But one of those great moments is just, you can tell that Larry loved the scene, not with what he says, but once once Jeff says cut, Larry just kind of looks at you and just gives you a nod of approval. And that's that nonverbal sign of approval. Just like, it's like the best feeling. It's just like, wow, Larry liked what I did.
Pretty great.
I don't know if you'll know the answer to this. And by the way, I checked, next week's guest, who we won't announce right now, was also involved in Fish Stuck. So he might know the answer if Himson doesn't know. But I'm just curious if you have any idea why Jeff Garland, Jeff Green's character, does not appear in the Fish Stuck episode. Like, you would think he'd be the natural guy to be in the restaurant with the other guys. Yep. And do you, from your perspective, do you know why at all, why he wasn't there in that scene or in the episode at all?
I do know why. But I don't think I'm allowed to say.
Okay, that's fine.
So then definitely don't. Then definitely
don't. Don't get in trouble on our podcast.
Yeah, right, well, I mean, it's not gonna spoil any. Well, hopefully it could be a spoiler, might not be. So I can't say.
Okay. All right. Let's not invade anyone's privacy.
But yeah, but his absence was certainly noted at Fish Stuck, and of course he makes a glorious return here for the Gettysburg Address. He is slapping men, standing up for Susie's honor. Can we take a step back to Fish Stuck for a second and watch Himson's scene from that episode?
Yes, this is the first scene, right? Yeah, it's like
the first appearance of the restaurant where we will first meet this fish.
I'm in the wrong episode. Sorry.
Okay.
You could talk for a second.
Well, I'll just edit this out.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Why do you ask him to divulge more braces at the end?
Yeah. Yeah. Give us more inside information you're not supposed to share.
Is Jeff having an affair with Kate Middleton?
Or Sienna Miller? Oh, you mean because Kate's disappeared for a while?
That's right.
Yeah, Jeff disappears from Fish Stuck. Kate's sending out photoshopped images.
Okay,
the timing is suspicious.
It certainly is. Okay, so let's start with Fish Stuck because, of course, that was the first episode that Himson appears in remind me how to pronounce it again?
Lawai.
The waiter at the restaurant, and we will jump in to the middle of Larry and friends looking at the fish struggling at the restaurant.
Look at him struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
His little nose is trapped in that filter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, excuse me. Yes, sir. That fish, it looks like he's stuck.
Oh, no, fish not stuck. Fish sick.
No, fish stuck.
No, this time of year is tough for fish, so fish get sick easily. The filter is very warm, so it make him feel better. So it's okay, it's normal.
Seriously, look at that. That fish is stuck.
No, see, fish wiggle and fish sneeze.
Fish don't sneeze, the fish can sneeze.
No, fish sneeze.
This guy's
fish sick, no, fish stuck. No, fish sick.
Oh, he's gonna get sick if he stays stuck.
No, it's okay.
Okay, can someone go in the tank and
mind. You know what, all this talk about fish, now I want fish. Give me the snapper off the menu.
Oh, fish delicious, okay.
My man.
That's a stuck fish.
I can't even eat. I feel so bad for that fish.
At least that motherfucker can't drown.
Which is a good point there by Leon. So
God bless JB. He's just so funny.
There? You're told you're going to argue with Larry about a fish, sure.
Yeah, for the scene, it just from casting, shout out to Allison Jones casting. She's amazing, and thank you for the opportunity.
We've heard that a lot. Let me say, we've heard that a lot.
If you look at her resume, like, how can you not be in awe of what she does? So
yeah.
I'm just honored to be on her radar. But sorry to answer your question. So for that scene, the only information I had was I'm a waiter at a restaurant. Larry notices that a fish is stuck. You're convinced that it's sick. Pretty much that's about it. So we just had that.
Yeah.
So we went on some fun tangents.
Time of year, you know, it's a tough time of year for the goldfish.
And yeah, we shot that during COVID too. So I kind of had that whole mindset of, there's diseases going around. So then there's so much stuff that got cut, but like another kind of road we went down was that there's like a special fish version of COVID and how it got, like, we put in a new fish from a different tank and then that got another fish sick and then that fish got that sick. And then it just kind of spread through the aquarium And that was pretty funny. But yeah, and then there's other versions where the fish is sick, but it's more emotional sickness that he was homesick because he didn't like life in the aquarium. So like, yeah, we had all kinds of fun stuff like that.
Of course he's homesick. You sent him downtown. He doesn't know anybody there.
Exactly.
So he had to, be quarantined downtown because of his fish COVID, apparently.
Yep, that's why he kind of stuck around the heater and all the other fish stayed away.
Yeah, so remind me, so at the time that you were recording this scene for the Fish Stuck, at this point, did you already know about the return for episode for the next episode or not yet?
Not yet, no.
Not yet, okay.
Like, I had a feeling because I'm kind of like checking my availability. They're like, hey, because they start the next episode next week, they're like, what's your schedule like? Like, what's going on? I was like,
oh, yeah, so that's good. A good sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's a good question. The phrase fish stuck, is that yours or was that given to you?
No, that was given to me. That was one of the points that they wanted to hit. So
I guess because that was the name of the episode. They wanted.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that was probably Jeff's brainchild there.
Okay. So we can't give you that because that'd be pretty cool if you had named an episode.
No, I wish, but no.
All right, that's very cool. Alex, we have any more Curb-related questions?
Well, can we see the next scene when they fight the next time at the restaurant?
Oh, sure. Well, we can watch all the scenes. Yeah, we can do that.
I was messaging you on the side. What's the timestamp for that one?
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
No worries.
28:30.
Yeah, I just found it just scrolling through. All right, let me.
And then the next episode is 31:40 of Gettysburg Address.
All right, so we're at the restaurant again, and our waiter is very clear that you cannot be sitting by the. He does not want Larry sitting near the fish
and
again.
Ian was being Peter Pan that day, and the chemistry
We're back at Sunwall Palace.
Sir, thank you. I'd like a table for two by the aquarium.
That table is reserved. But we have a nice table over here, though.
Oh, it's reserved?
Yes.
Over there.
Okay, you follow me this way.
All right, okay.
The misdirection.
Sir, can I help you? Excuse me, sir. Your table that way.
Yeah, what happened to the orange fish that was stuck?
Oh, fish is sad, so we changed new location. Change of scenery make much happy fish.
So, you moved the fish?
Yes, fish living best life in downtown. They're happy there.
That was so nice of you.
You can go visit your new friend, orange fish.
I can handle the death of the fish. Just tell me.
Fish fine. Fish thriving.
No. Fish stuck? Fish dead?
No. Fish sick? Fish gone.
Dead.
Sick bones.
Dead.
Sick on stuck.
Dead.
Fish not your problem anymore.
I will not forget fish.
Okay, I bring your table some water.
I just love that immediate switch of like emotion there.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the highlights. Like, that's such an iconic running joke through Curbs, just on this back and forth. So I was like, that was just so fun. And I think Larry just kept breaking character during that part just because it was just so silly that we're just in each other's face yelling about fish. And that was just, that was really funny to watch that back.
Yeah, you almost get like the iconic stare down during the fish stuck, fish gone, fish stuck, fish gone. He's trying to lean in on you a little bit, intimidate you a little bit, but your character will not back down. And then it seems like that's the end of it. And then of course we get to the next episode and we find out that you're just a man who loves theater. And apparently you have enough connections to get to what is like the debut performance of this play, right? Because this is only for like, Cheryl is the spouse of the star of the show and your seat is one row better than hers.
Yeah. It's the family and friends preview of the show. So I like to think that Ted's like a, well, in my mind, like Ted comes into my restaurant time. I like him way better than Larry.
Yeah, I guess so. That's right. So maybe Ted gave you the tickets. Yeah, that would make sense.
No, because like, Ted is not a problem. He eats his food and pays his bill and goes home.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a part that
doesn't get in fights about fish. Yeah,
exactly. There was actually a part that we were improvising that was really fun during the scene, but it didn't make the final cut. Was that then I started actually talking about how big of a fan of Ted I am, and I'm like, oh, Ted's gonna do great. Ted's gonna win a Tony Award for this play. Like, just, and then in Larry's mind, like, they're still kind of rivals at the same time. But
oh, for sure.
Yeah, but that was a lot of fun. And yeah, the whole thing with Ted was so much fun, and we were just kind of cracking up watching Ted do his thing on the stage as well, because he's playing this play so seriously, and just watching him was hilarious in his stovetop hat and his beard.
Yep. All right. So here we are at the play, and Larry is about to sit down in his seats, and he will find someone one row in front of him.
Well, they're good seats. It's nice to see you.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. Are you excited to see this?
Yeah, I am.
I really like Lori Loughlin.
Oh, yeah. Quite a gal. Hey. I know you. You're a waiter at that Chinese restaurant, right?
Oh, yes. I work at Sunhua Palace.
How's the dead fish?
Still dead? Oh, you the fish guy? No, we don't have dead fish. Visit downtown restaurant. You see fish there. Very happy, doing better
I'm
there.
I'm going to go this weekend.
Okay.
Big history buff? You like Lincoln?
Oh, yes. One of favorite president.
You know, if Lincoln had a fish tank and a fish got stuck in the filter, Lincoln would have freed the fish.
A fish not stuck, so Lincoln no have fish to free.
It's a hypothetical. Lincoln would free fish.
Why you care so much about fish?
Why you no care about fish?
Maybe you worry about yourself.
Yeah.
You have problems, sir.
No, you have problems. You pathological liar.
Hey.
No.
Yeah. Fish. Sick. Fish stuck.
No, fish move.
Fish dead. Fish dead.
What are you doing? We're here to watch a play.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we get to see the play. yeah, so incredible return performance. I guess the fish stuck was not enough for Larry with Himson, so he brings you back.
The quality
you don't have as bigger.
The quality you mentioned with the double tripling down is never more apparent, where you refuse to even engage in the hypothetical about Lincoln because the fish was not stuck. Like, there's nothing to even talk about here. Like,
there's no even world, no dimension where the fish is stuck in my mind.
I'm not even going to let you take me down this line of questioning.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so Av, why don't we get to the postman now, and then after we hear from some of the listeners, we'll come back and get Himson's ratings on this episode.
Yeah, I just had one more thing I wanted to ask you about before we went forward. Can you explain? I saw this on your IMDb. Can you explain to me what you did in Avengers Endgame?
That is it's a good question. I mean, I was part of the stunt team for Avengers Endgame. I was out in Atlanta shooting with that team for a couple of weeks. One of the main things, I mean, this is how you can tell they have just obscene amounts of money, is we spent at least a week rehearsing a fight with Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner for the whole, you know how in the movie where
they fight each other?
Yeah, they're like fighting each other. But in a different version, there's also an alien invasion at that time. So they're all trying to get to them while they're trying to essentially sacrifice themselves. So there's this huge battle that we rehearsed, shot for weeks, and it didn't even make the cut. It's just, I mean, but that's how genius the Russo brothers are. Is that, I mean, I love that scene where Scarlett just kind of sacrificed herself, and you see her just, it's an emotional moment, and I think that it just made it so much better that it's more about them, not necessarily about the aliens attacking. And then there's another big fight scene that I was part of.
So you agree with the decision to cut you out of the movie?
Yeah, I would take that. I was like an alien. I don't think I'm allowed to say what alien race, because that might, I don't know. That's
fine.
Don't mess with Marvel. Never mess with Marvel.
I agree.
Yeah, you never know what might come later.
Yeah, exactly. Marvel and Disney. But yeah, the alien thing would have got just taken away from it. But then I also was part of the fight scene with when Hawkeye was still Ronin at the time, and he's just plowing through Yakuza guys in the streets of Tokyo, and goes after Hiroyuki Sanada, who's the Yakuza boss. So that was like another week of shooting that fight. And those were like the two main things that I was part of.
Cool. Very cool. So yeah, that's Avengers Endgame was awesome. I think everyone agrees about that.
One of my all-time favorites, yeah.
Yeah. All right, I think we could go to the postman. So yeah, let's jump in into that.
I'm the mail.
Yes.
I'm the guy that is delivering the mail, so that is a stain on an otherwise perfect record. I've never lost a piece of mail. Listen.
you don't want to go to something, don't go, but don't hide behind the U.S. Postal Service.
We have a number of letters this week. Let's see. We have, I think, 8, 9, 10. We have 10. We have 10 postmen this week. Pretty good. Pretty good. 10 letters. So we'll start off with Alex Orvitz. He's been gone for a little while. He says, really liked this one. I thought it started pretty strong and had some really out of left field storylines. The Lori Loughlin one was my favorite. Himson, what was your take on the whole Lori Loughlin thing? I assume you didn't know about that.
I kind of knew about that because I was there when they were kind of talking about her scenes and stuff like that. Mm. And I thought, I mean, that's more power to her. I know that was probably a very dark moment in her life and for her family, but be able to kind of turn it into comedy and laugh at it and as a way to kind of move forward. I know a lot of people are probably still kind of hung up on that, but if she's able to move forward and bring some comedy into our lives with it, then more power to her.
Absolutely.
And Curb did this obviously with Michael Richards when they bring him on with the Danny Duberstein scene with Leon. So yeah, not the first time that Curb has helped to rehabilitate someone's image for some
exactly. That's why they say laughter is the best remedy.
Yeah, but also in some ways give someone a platform to, like, I don't want to say like apologize and make amends, but just like to own something and like
exactly
in some way make it okay. But like doing it on this like big stage and just like being willing to say, yeah, I was an asshole that time.
Exactly. I think that's a perfect way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lori's defense in the episode of Curb is I'm an even bigger ass the rest of the time.
So. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what's the big deal about like paying off somebody to get your kid into a school? It's like, just don't be a thoroughly garbage person in your everyday life. Just be nice to people. And then whatever like sketchy things you're doing behind the scenes, like whatever. Everyone has stuff going on in their closets, I'm sure. So he goes on to talk about Sienna Miller's fruit eating. He calls it really bizarre, but a fun visual gag. Is this something you see a lot of on movie scenes, TV scenes, people chewing a lot of fruit while they act?
Honestly, it's very true. And that's why I probably laugh the hardest at those parts when she's just eating the fruit in between sentences, because there are like so many different techniques of acting and stuff. And there are certain techniques like using props to kind of realize your character and bring your character to life by giving them something to do. Actually, on my earlier years of acting, I would always, I'd have like a bottle of water just kind of off camera and stuff. But I feel like sometimes I'd take a sip of water so I could really think about what's going on and really play up that dramatic moment. But yeah, there are a lot of actors out there that use that type of technique, and it works for them. It works for them. But huge props to Sienna for being able to laugh at that. And it made me want to like go back Jason and watch her other movies to see if it's true.
Yeah, we haven't seen that show. Have you seen Anatomy of Anatomy of a Fall? Anatomy of a Scandal?
I haven't gotten to it yet. It's definitely on the watch list.
Yeah.
Anatomy of a Fall was
Jason Alexander. Yes, I'm mixing my anatomies. Jason Alexander has spoken about in Seinfeld how he would use the everything around the room, the props, on set. You know, he'd be in his apartment, and he'd go in, he'd pick up an apple from the fruit bowl, and then he'd go sit on the couch and play with a pillow. And he's actually talking about how he used those things. Yeah, so it wasn't an apple, it was an onion, who knows? But yeah, but he's actually talked about that. I didn't think about that when we recorded our first podcast the other night. But I wonder if there was somewhat of a reference there. Probably not, because this is Larry, not Jason. But it certainly is something that he's talked about a lot on Seinfeld. And so here we see Sienna doing it to extreme comedic effect. But yeah,
I'm sure there must have been some type of inspiration from there.
Yeah.
But no, I vibe with that, like, because I am pretty ADHD, like diagnosed ADHD. So I'm like always constantly moving, and that kind of helps focus me a little bit more.
But your water that you had right off camera, you weren't spitting it up all over your co-star in the scene the way that Sienna.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It's just like for some reason in my mind, I was like, this is something a character does. It's not just me spitting lines. Like, this character is actually doing something, even if it's something as minuscule as holding a bottle of water.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like diagnosed with like ADHD, but it was like mild enough that it's like, yeah. And like, you have a job and you're married, and so you're probably fine. So like, you don't need to take medicine. So don't. And I was like, oh, that's like the worst place to be. Like, either make me that I don't have it, or here you have it, but like medicine will cure it.
Yeah, that middle ground's the worst.
Yeah, it's like purgatory. So yeah, I just get distracted a lot. Yeah, anyway, so he, Alex goes on to talk about, he says, Lowry's practicing the Gettysburg Address, giving him the automatic P response is pretty wacky, but also funny. Although it's a little sad that an elderly man peeing his pants in public is the punchline. it's also wild that our favorite Chinese restaurant waiter contributed to it. Fish may not have been stuck, but Lowry is certainly now that he's being arrested again, which sort of felt like an abrupt ending. So I assume it will continue next week. Pretty good. Four pretties. Come with guy is Leon, who deserves to eat as much food as he wants. What is this? That one Simpsons episode? Honorary mention to all those guys who cheered Larry on in the washroom. Yeah, that was a very fun scene when they cheered.
At the Lakers game, yeah.
Yeah. The fucking asshole is, I want to give it to the...
Lakers fans are known for their appreciation of history, so...
He wants to give it to Shimon for being just an all-around jerk, and the accent was a little borderline, but Lori Loughlin is pretty scumbaggy, so she ultimately wins this week. Okay, Jack Small writes in. He says that's two, count them, two really solid Curb episodes in a row. Both of them have Himson in them. Who's surprised? the Gettysburg Address had some really fun moments in it. For me, the most notable ones being the montage of Lowry reciting the address in different locations as he relieves himself, the dick-decorated billboards, and Lori Loughlin's questionable morality. If I had to poke some holes in the episode, I'd point to the overall weirdness of the Sienna Miller eating bits, not having enough Leon, and the Lori Loughlin storyline not being wrapped up with a nice bow. Yeah, I agree with that. While, like, it doesn't resolve, like you thought it was going to lead to, like, Larry, like, backstabbing her or, like, having to undercut her, and, like, I don't know, maybe they cut something out. It seemed like it kind of was left floating.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that, but, yeah, I mean...
I guess we're just supposed to assume she's in the club and just like now Larry's pissed that he helped an asshole get in.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it might come up again, but from what I remember, I mean, she's just in the club and
that's it.
I don't know. There's so many possibilities that could happen. You never know where the show is going to go.
Right. It would be funny if like it comes back to bite him that like he sponsored this jerk into the club and now he gets kicked out of the club or, you know, something. Certainly a lot of bad seems to be all like coalescing for Larry, it seems, in the next few episodes we have to go.
Yeah, that's also like one of the things I think that this season has really been hitting on the head better than more recent seasons is that they are kind of circling back where they are kind of tying up the storyline of each episode, where sometimes stuff just happens and you're like, okay, I mean, that's funny, but I don't know where it's going. But I love how they're kind of dovetailing their A line and their B line together in the end, where it kind of comes together. Cause yeah, like the entire episode, you're kind of wondering where is this going?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then Larry gets busted with the spray paint can that was set up, scenes earlier. I think that's something that they've been really trying to focus on this season. And just, I think it just makes the season so much better as well.
Yeah. When Curb is at work in and clicking at its best, it's doing those storylines that wrap up and like in a way that feels like both surprising, but like, oh, I should have seen that coming or like that makes sense. Like it actually works. Sometimes exactly. It's like very random and like forced and you're like, eh, okay. But like when, when we have good ones, it's really good. Like I thought this was a particularly good one, with the peeing, coming back around. He continues, he says, slight nitpick, right at the beginning of the episode, Leon tells Larry that he's going to get dessert and says, don't leave me. And then we see Larry proceed to do exactly that and drive over to Susie's billboard. Where the heck did Leon go? All right, good question. Last note, I also generally didn't love most of the buffet owner's appearance, but I did love his remark at the end when he says, Rachel, she looks at the rug merchants and says, you're banned, bitch, shalom. His episode rating as well, pretty good. He says really more of a 3.75, but he's going to round up.
Nice. Well, thank you. Thank you for that roundup.
Yeah. Come with guy. Although this is only my third postman, it still feels notable that I'm picking this person because I generally want to avoid doing so, but I have to give the come with guy to Larry. He selflessly and vehemently vouches for Lori Loughlin to be allowed membership at the club despite having no prior personal relationship with her. And he fixes Sienna Miller's acting. He also comes with Leon to vandalize the buffet. Fucking asshole is Shimon. It's an all-you-can-eat buffet. You can't be throwing that term if you're not willing to back it up. I do, however, have one bit of sympathy for Shimon, that being that Leon had what appeared to be two very full plates when he went up to get the plate that broke the camel's back. You got to finish the existing plate before getting up to get another plate.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's buffet etiquette.
Yeah, but all right. Also, it's just like, just don't be like so obvious about it.
Yeah.
Like, lay low. Like, get your food, but just, like, you know, don't be a pig about it.
Leon is not a man who lays low.
I guess, yeah. He has his style.
Leon's got no shame. He just does what he does.
Yeah, sure. Raj Krishnan says, is it just me or does Susie start and stop businesses throughout the series? Remember season 4 with Ben Stiller on the shirts? That's the one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's always doing various.
With the bejeweled, the Kansas City Chiefs shirt, I think it is. There's a green one, which is the Packers, and a red one, which is the Chiefs, or maybe Ohio State, something like that.
Yeah. Susie for sure did like 12 different businesses during COVID, right?
Yeah. As long as Jeff's lawyer found a way to get, loans forgiven for all of them.
Yeah, she was like, right. She was selling bread, and she was like consulting about something, and she was like an organizer.
Yeah, she started a sourdough company for sure. Yeah.
In this episode, Susie says she doesn't do blowjobs, but she does. Remember that episode years ago where Larry Johnson took her vehicular fellatio. Yes. That's it. As we said, maybe because she got injured, she stopped doing the fellatio altogether. Poor on Jeff. Like, he should point out to her, it was the vehicular was the problem, not the fellatio.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I don't understand the whole urination and Gettysburg address connection. It was like a Pavlovian thing.
Yeah. How about this? How about you start reading the same thing every single time you pee and come back to us in 6 months?
report back to us if it works. Yeah. Okay. Abhi Boo Dharma. I believe this is a new writer in her. Says, hi guys, digging the show, big Seinfeld and Curb fan, big. I used to record new episodes of Feld. He calls it Feld on VHS every Thursday. I've never heard somebody call it Feld before.
Well, he's on a half last name basis, which you aren't. So.
when we watched in the dorms at NYU in the 90s. Wow. We lived a few blocks from Rudy's and literally around the corner from the eyeglasses store where Elaine got bit by the dog. Anyway.
Where George was spotting onions, as you referenced earlier.
As a lousy Jew and human being, I've never had much use for our holy books, but as a human, I've still needed a cohesive worldview and guidance in everyday living. I consider Seinfeld my Torah and Curb my Talmud. Do these analogies make sense to you?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think to some extent, Seinfeld is like the basis, and then my Curb is the exposition.
Yes, for sure. It's a great analogy.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you discuss. Yeah, I think you actually nailed it spot on.
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
And for those who know,
the only difference I would say is that the Talmud, because it has so much expository, is like thousands and thousands of pages, much longer than the Torah itself. Whereas Curb, we're limited to our 120 episodes, many fewer than Seinfeld's 100.
But thematically, Curb is much more free flowing,
and Curb goes over a 25-year period as opposed to a 9-year period. Yeah,
yeah, and tangents and
Curb expands on the Seinfeld audio.
Seinfeld is certainly tight. Yeah, Seinfeld's tight. Curb is aimless at times.
I mean, Seinfeld, they leave New York, three times? They go to L.A. once. They go to India, obviously. Right? Whereas Curb, we're always going all over the place.
Yeah.
Actually, a little funny thing about the shooting locations of Curb, I don't know if you've noticed that they're all in West L.A. And that is by design, actually.
Interesting.
That
I don't know L.A. well enough to know the difference.
Oh, gotcha. So, everything's kind of in within a certain mile radius to where Larry lives, which is very convenient to him. And I guess when you run the show, you can make those type of decisions. So he has a very short commute to set every day.
That makes sense.
I mean, like if I was in charge of a show and was, I'd be like, make it convenient for me and someone else can go to hell.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy. I think you nailed it, actually. I've been savoring the final season. What a treat being alive while the canon is being written. Close for all time. All right, calm down. It's just a show. will Larry produce an Apocrypha? All right, good email. That was a great email. Very good. Very good, Adi.
He's really right. Like, in the way that, like, the Torah is sort of, like, ostensibly written by God, there's sort of, like, a fiction about, like, the original authorship. And in the same way that Seinfeld, we sort of grew up thinking, this is the show written by Jerry Seinfeld. Then only later on do we learn from Curb, it was actually this other guy behind the scenes. So, the same rabbis who are credited with writing the Talmud may or may not have had some authorship to the first book, potentially.
Yeah, it's intended to fill in gaps. Like, that's like almost the purpose of it. It was like, what does this even mean? And like, talk about it for 100 pages. And like, here's the real story.
Yeah.
Which I've long argued that Curb Your Enthusiasm is Larry David's Seinfeld reality tour.
Yes.
I could definitely see that.
Oh, you think Jerry, they called it Seinfeld. You think that was Jerry Seinfeld's show? That was my show. Let me show you. I'm doing a different show. It's going to be the same show. And you'll see who is really the show.
Yeah.
Okay, Fitzy, Brendan Fitzpatrick says, hey, gents, a few notes. Did you notice that Larry didn't wash his hands after he peed? Disgusting. I did not notice that, but I'm sure now I will.
Disappointing by Larry.
Yeah, has the Seinfeld finale been mentioned in all six episodes so far?
All six?
That's interesting. That's interesting to go back and check.
There's the two that we noted. Wait,
there
two.
Was a third. No, there's a third.
Ted mentions it here. Yeah. There's the Turners mentioned it, Melanie and Hobie Turner at the breakfast.
There's
at the club.
There's
another
one. At least
interesting.
One.
Yeah.
At least one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. So we know something's coming in the finale.
We know something's coming. Yes.
Yeah.
We don't know what the something is. But
yeah.
It's gonna be something.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good.
I think so. Really feels like they're seeing that through line for what the Curb finale will be. Larry is totally right. The jacket goes on the back of the chair in the theater. Oh, interesting. The guy before, and Fitzy is a big movie guy, so you know.
Yeah, Fitz is crazy here.
Yeah, I think he's wrong. I still maintain, like, I think it's okay, but just no one does it. For sure, with like the big theaters, it's okay.
If the space is big enough between the rows for it not to affect the person, it's okay. But at that point, you probably have enough space next to you that you also don't need to.
Right, throw it on under your reclining chair.
You have
a whole bunch of shit down there.
In my mind, I think you're paying for the seat. Why don't you get the whole seat? You can do whatever you want with the back. If you want to hang a coat over.
Also, you're arguing. Okay, well, I guess
you want to stand on top and like shoot darts at people. It's your seat.
Yeah.
Within reason.
Don't be a dick. It's kind of real life.
Well, while we're talking about the finale here, did we talk about it on the podcast a couple days ago? I don't remember that. So the title for the series finale has been dropped. No Lessons Learned. So we do know that because originally, you know, we got the names for the first 9 episodes. We did not have a name for the 10th episode. So No Lessons Learned, an obvious Seinfeld reference there, a very strong finale reference there. So, yeah. So things look like they're going to be tied together very nicely.
So you think it's a direct reference to No Hugging, No Learning?
That has to be.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's there's no way that's a coincidence. Yeah. Even with Larry, who forgets 80% of Seinfeld lore. Right. Yeah. That's for sure. That's for sure intentional.
But you know why? Because that's not a Seinfeld reference. It's a Larry David reference. That's why he knows it.
Yes.
It's not from the show.
Yeah. Now I forget when you were making the prediction for it. You agree that, or was it Jerry Seinfeld will appear in the episode? Was that a discussion that we had?
I think all of them will be.
Yes, all four of them. Oh yes, we did discuss this. Yes, sorry.
You think that the whole Seinfeld, kind of a Seinfeld reunion in the Curb finale?
We think the core four are coming back.
The theory I floated on the last podcast is on our last episode is that what I see this headed in some way is I think it's going to get tied into the trial and all these arrests. Where somehow it's going to be because in the way that the Seinfeld finale was Larry being confronted by all of Jerry and all the whole gang being confronted by all the people they had wronged over the years. Not exactly that, but some sort of spin on that where Larry is held to account for his lifetime of bad behavior and is somehow forced and adjudicated to have to make amends for all of that by somehow making amends for the greatest sin of all, the fucking up the Seinfeld finale. And he has to somehow do a redo of the Seinfeld finale to make it all okay. And
But you're sticking with this, even though we discussed on the last podcast how in the world of Curb, they already made a Seinfeld reunion, which was very celebrated.
Right. But it's fine. They'll just yada yada over that and say, but everyone still hates the finale.
Yeah. Which, I mean, clearly they do because Turner's mentioning it. Danton's mentioning it. So for sure.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to rewatch the whole season and find all the references. Maybe I'll do that and report back on our next episode.
So who is it? Brendan says it's happened in all six.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think he's just asking. I don't know. I think he's here. I don't know.
Well, if anyone remembers the other references other than the two I just mentioned, let us know.
Yeah.
Drop us a note. Yeah. All right. Who's our next postman submitter?
Yeah, so Kenny Eisman says, well, it's hard to come back from last week's fantastic episode. This one was still very funny, not to say I don't have some qualms. For instance, I got so excited that Larry was eating at a kosher all-you-can-eat buffet, but then ended up being not. Yes, I had that same thing. I was like, oh, this is going to be good. I wanted to see Larry eating kugel and that'd be amazing.
Because it was called Shimon's, you mean?
Correct. Right. I thought it was going to go in much more Jewy.
Shimon's serving the crab legs.
Yeah, but we'll give this episode to the Gentiles. They can have this one.
Yeah.
more importantly, Larry, take out your phone like everyone else and scroll Twitter while you pee. The jacket stuff back had me cracking up. Oh, but only Jet Larry can get away making fun of the way immigrants talk, the way Asian immigrants talk all over and over. But yeah, it's bizarre that he gets away with this. But yeah, like, so Larry just somehow gets away with stuff. And I guess that's okay.
Well, Hibson, can I ask you a question?
No, absolutely. Well,
because, like, you are, you know, we can tell, talk to you now, like, you have an American accent. You don't have, like, an immigrant accent in your natural speaking language. Because we asked this to Dana Lee when he was on our podcast once, but, you know, I think his accent's a little bit different naturally, so he looked at it from a little different perspective. But one of the criticisms of Seinfeld and Curb, to an extent also, is sort of the stereotype of Asian Americans on screen usually being immigrants and having sort of like a pidgin English, not speaking with a natural accent. And how do you feel about that as someone who, obviously, it's the opportunity of a lifetime to be on a show like Curb, but, you know, you are an Asian American who speaks with a sort of stereotypical American accent, and yet on the show you're asked to portray more of an immigrant accent.
No, absolutely, yeah. I actually grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, so... Yeah, I think my Boston accent would have not worked for this role. But that was actually kind of, I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, it's an opportunity of a lifetime to work on a legendary show that I've loved growing up. But yeah, I did actually have some slight hesitation because of the accent. But I think the really important thing to realize, especially when I was doing kind of my character breakdown, was that the jokes work because of the accent. But the jokes aren't about the accent. So it's like I could see that people could argue, it's like, well, you don't really need the accent at all. And yeah, that could work. But I just feel like the flow, because comedy is all about cadence and timing and pacing. And I think that with the accent, it just works so much better. But I made sure to not make like a stereotypical accent, because honestly, I was just channeling my dad. My dad's an immigrant from Hong Kong. He's lived in America for well over 40 years, and he still does have a slight accent. So if anything, I was making Lo Wei, or Chinese restaurant waiter, making him a real human being. He's not a caricature of Asian people, and I totally understand that the accent can be triggering for some. And there are, I mean, even like mentioning Shimon, like he has an accent, and they're talking about like Israeli accent, stuff like that. I don't think necessarily it's Larry mocking people, but that is also kind of part of daily life. There are these people out there. They are real people at the same time. It's not, we can't be so hypersensitive that everyone with an accent is there to mock that group of people. So that was kind of my big takeaways from that, was just making sure that the accent was like, had a purpose. It wasn't just for.
Yeah. Well, the episode, as you said, is called Fish Stuck. That doesn't work without the accent. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's also like, to your point, like the joke is also more on Larry. And this is like a running trope of Larry. Like when Larry gets into arguments, it's his cadence more that you're mirroring more than the other way around in some ways. Like Larry gets into arguments with people all the time where he just like yells short, abrupt phrases.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's just also natural human nature, is when you're trying to connect with someone, you start to kind of mimic what they're doing. And I don't think necessarily that Larry is mocking the people that he does kind of do the accent back to. I think it's just him in his mind, maybe that's his way to get through. Like, these people are not understanding what I'm telling them. So if I say it back to them in their way, they'll understand better. So I don't think Larry's being mean-spirited about it at all.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Come with guy, he says, is Lori Loughlin for allowing herself to be the butt of the joke. Asshole is also Lori Loughlin for cheating in golf and cheating to get a handicap space. And cheating to get your kids into college. I give the episode 3.5 critics. All right, we have a few more to go. Jim Crumley says this is another solid episode, though there are a number of loose threads. Who is behind the penny graffiti? Pina graffiti. Okay, I see what you did there. Jeff, do we think it was Jeff? Or do you think it was just a random vandal out there?
Yeah, I think, well, the first penis was certainly a random vandal.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you could make an argument that penis number 2 and penis number 3 are Jeff related because of the perceived success of penis number 1. But Jeff's also very lazy. He doesn't love Tuesday enough to try and help her business.
Yeah.
Could you imagine Jeff crawling up to that billboard to do that, though?
Exactly.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, exactly. Happening. Yeah, that's not happening. Yeah.
Jim asks, will Sienna
Miller... Leon would have to be involved.
Jim wants to know, will Sienna Miller be back? I say yes.
That's a good question, because I would have said no when she called, you know, I have alopecia, you fucking asshole, and she left.
Oh, right.
But that's then cool. when
I love that.
Yeah, but he also, I mean, he does help her acting. He sort of saves her career, or at least her gig with this movie. So yeah. I would guess no. I think we're done with her,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. Will Shimon come back? Definitely not. What Civil War leader will Ted play next?
Yes. Ulysses Simpson Grant. What about him?
Sherman? Is there someone Sherman?
William Tecumseh? The Southern? The Confederate?
He really tries to pull one out and just goes Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin. four pretties from Jim. Come with guy, Lori Loughlin, quite a good sport. I'm not sure that she is ready to be rehabilitated. And the fucking asshole is Shimon. He's right up there with the car rental guys and not knowing the guidelines of the business he's trying to run. If it's not really all you can eat, then limitations should be posted somewhere. Okay. Zach Brooks says, I have no idea why Larry is constantly reading the Gettysburg Address, but more bathrooms should have P-reading material. Fucking asshole is Larry. You can drape your jacket over the back of a chair, but put it on the inside of the chair and sit on it. That's a pretty normal concept in the theater. Also, fucking asshole move interrupting the buffet guy during a run. Come with guy is Lori Loughlin. Definition, come with by coming on the show to make fun of herself. I hope they intentionally aired the slap parody on Oscars night and the Godzilla toy on Oscars night and Ted in an episode when Mrs. Ted Danson appeared on the Oscars. I don't know about that.
There's a pure coincidence.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mary Steenburgen. Yeah, she was. That's true.
Yeah, she was there. Four pretties. Needed more Leon.
Although in the world of Curb, they're divorced. She's long gone. Who cares about her?
Right. That's true. Yeah, the season has been a little light on Leon. I can't say I love that, but it is what it is. Okay. Olin Allen says, decent episodes, good laughs, mainly from the female characters. Will Smith and Chris Rock references seem to be done a bit haphazardly. Ted Danson trying to play on both sides of the Civil War divide. Larry seemed very easygoing and non-competitive in the golf, which seems to be the opposite of a lot of what we see. Come with gal is Susie. Fucking asshole is Lolly. Oh, is that you? Does he know? How does he know that your name is Lolly? Was that his?
Yeah, that is.
He wrote Lolli. Is that your character?
No.
Oh, no, that's a different. Who is that? Maybe he means Lori. I think that must be an R type.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that makes more sense.
I'm pretty sure it's about Lori Loughlin. Yeah.
I think he's saying you're the fucking asshole. Let's go with that.
Nice theory, though. Yeah.
3.5 out of 5. And last off is John Gormley, who says, this was an episode where I had a different experience from the first and second viewing. Thought the episode was pretty weak on the first viewing, but improved upon in the second go. I think I also felt that way. Observed a lot of similar plot holes as you guys did in your recap. The golf part was a clever self-deprecating element, quite similar to what they did with Michael Richards and a few other guests throughout the series in a way to lightly paint over a serious controversy. I think Curb should be the first outlet one considers when a scandal buries them and they need to get out of. Thought it was strange the fish stuck guy returned, but I really enjoyed it. Every episode so far this season has recalled back to the previous episode in some way that has not been the series arc. We've also spent a huge amount of time at the golf club, which is even more surprising as two episodes weren't set in LA. Glancing at next week's preview, it looks as if the golf club is going to be involved again. Maybe one of the thoughts Larry comes to when agreeing on a new season is that he can spend half the shooting time playing golf. Sounds consistent with your theory, Emerson. Jeff and Larry's reaction to the billboard was the highlight of the episode. Genuine infectious laughter brought out of that scene. Very true. Curb has been 2 years out of date with a lot of jokes this season, such as the Wordle gag, giving a water to voters, and now the Oscars. At least it aired on an appropriate week, allowing it not to seem too far out of left field. There's going to be a COVID-themed episode later this season. I hope they land that one all right, and it's not like going back in time again. Overall, above average episode, 3 pretties out of 5. Come with gal, I'll give to Susie. She was a trooper in this episode, took on board a new business, and gave her husband the biggest laugh I've ever seen him get. Fucking asshole for 2 weeks in a row is the restaurant waiter.
Wow, again.
Sorry, but not the same waiter as last week. Last week. This week, it goes to Shimon. Looking forward to next week's one, which is reported to be a top shelf episode. The other episode was shown at the LA season premiere besides episode 1. Okay, very cool. So with all of that said, all those ratings in.
Well, I don't know how official any of these rankings really are.
Himson, what do you say is your rating for the Gettysburg Address?
I mean, just the fact that Larry pees himself due to his own Pavlovian. I thought that episode just set up so geniusly, but also such a childish payoff, which is just right up my alley, you know. I give it 5 pretties. So it's a pretty, 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 pretty good episode.
Yeah, people tend to like the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that they're in, general rule of thumb. But yeah, I like this episode, not quite as high as you. I gave it 3.5 pretties. Alex, where did you end up on this episode?
I ended up with 2. I thought after the last 3 episodes were like, you know, incredible, incredible episodes, I thought this was the weakest of the LA episodes. Himson, I didn't even pick up on the alopecia, the Will Smith, Chris Rock thing, and like the slap. Like, I didn't even realize any of that at the time. It had to be explained to me, which is partially an indictment of me for sure, but partially an indictment, I think, of the episode. But yeah, but last week, your first episode, Fish Stuck, our listeners ranked that as the 3rd best episode in the series history. So that was just an absolute beloved episode. Our guest last week, Michael Lipman, who played Rabbi Edelman, he only gave the episode 4.5 pretties. 4.5, obviously very, very good, but not as good as 5,
for sure,
as you give the Gettysburg Address.
So I am a little impartial to the show, you know. So I mean, sure, any episode to me is always going to be 5 pretties.
For sure. All right, so we have Himson's 5. We have the listeners at 3.69. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, and then you at 3.5, me at 2. Where are we cumulatively here for this episode?
Yeah, that gives us an overall grade of 3.55. This is the 44th ranked episode.
All right, so top third. Overall, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, very, very solid. Shabby. Yeah, we thought that we had a nice run. These last 4 episodes, in going backwards order, this week was 44, Fish Stock 16, Disgruntled 39, Vertical Drop Horizontal Tug 55. So all like top half episodes since we've been back in LA.
Yeah.
And saw, you know, and one really high ranked episode when, you know, the first 2 episodes of the season did not rate very well in our scoring system
relative to other episodes of Curb.
I think it's one of those seasons where if the more you watch it, like kind of what one of the listeners was saying, like the second time around, third time around, you start picking up on these little Easter eggs that kind of accumulates to the very end, and you're just like, wow, that was genius. In the moment, maybe it's a 3, but when you look at the big picture and how it all played together in these pieces, you're just like, okay, that's, I see what they did there, and bump up another pretty or so.
Yeah, I hear that.
I think that's the value of comedy in general, because yeah, every time you see it, you pick up on more jokes you missed. Like, I think you should leave, which we talked about earlier, when the new season 3 came out. My initial viewing, I was sort of, I didn't like it, and I immediately, as soon as I finished watching it, I rewatched seasons 1 and 2 to like, I'm like, all right, that was okay, but let me get like the really, really good stuff. And then I came back, and now season 3, I mean, I haven't thought about how I would sequence the 3 seasons in my ratings, but I love it as much as the other 2. So many iconic bits. But yeah, sometimes you just need to watch them over and over, and then you appreciate it more with comedy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Himson, that leaves us.
I don't feel like that works the same in drama as much. Like, you don't watch Schindler's List again, and you're like, "Oh, the Nazis are the bad guys."
Maybe not Schindler's List, but like The Wire, when you rewatch.
Sure, yeah, no, The Wire is a show that rewards a rewatch for
Game
sure.
Game of Thrones, yeah. you know, when like you were like watching season 1, there's just like some random guy who's at the court, and you're like, "Oh, that was like."
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, a lot of these richer, deeper, like these HBO shows for sure. I'm rewatching The Sopranos right now with my wife, and
nice.
That's a great rewatch.
Yeah. I just started rewatching that as well.
I'm rewatching.
What are you up to?
The Leftovers.
Himson, where are you up to in Sopranos?
I am just about to finish season 2.
Okay, so we're early in season 2.
Yeah.
Oh, we should do a Sopranos podcast together.
Are you watching it solo or with someone else?
Solo. I usually put it on like when I'm working out or something like that, just to watch on the treadmill.
The rewatch solo is much easier. The rewatch with another person, like in the, it took us like 5 days to between season 1 and season 2 to get started. And every night I'd be like, "Do you want to watch? Do you want to watch? Do you want to watch?" Because like I've seen it before, I know what's gonna happen, but I really want to watch it. Like we're in a groove here, and it took us like days. And I was like, "But we're doing this together as like a married couple thing." So
me and my wife are kind of the same thing. We have our certain shows that we watch together. But then we each have our own individual shows that we're like, all right, I'm going to watch this by my own. If you want to watch it, go ahead too. But I'm going to fly this one solo.
Yeah, I could watch a season of Survivor on my own in like 4 hours. And if I want to watch it together with my wife and my daughter and coordinating all everyone's schedules, it takes 6
months. That's a month. Yeah.
We got to get Kinson's come with guy.
Oh, come on. Be a come with guy.
I mean, it's been mentioned quite a few times and for good reason. I think Sienna Miller just kills it for me as the come with. Just that fruit thing. I know it was a little inside baseball where people are like, I don't get it, but I think for the industry people, we just got such a kick out of that. And I think that's so funny. And just the whole, her wigs and like that too, like not just the fruits, like Larry's like, I've never seen your real hair. I don't know what your hair looks like. I thought that was like really under the radar joke as well. Cause like, yeah, there's people on set that or just in daily life, I see offset and I don't recognize them cause I'm so used to seeing them in different things. So I thought that was hilarious. So Sienna Miller for sure.
Awesome. And who would you say is your fucking asshole?
You're a fucking asshole. That's what you are.
It's Shimon, but Ike Barinholtz is just so funny, and I love that guy. And just
no loyalty. You're both in the restaurant industry together. You're throwing him under the bus.
We got rival restaurants. That's why.
That's true. Yeah.
But so yeah, Shimon is. I think I played it just so well, and I didn't have any issues with the accent there because I get it. But like little things that Ike does that people don't really notice. Like it's just so funny to me that he wouldn't even stop jogging while he's like trying to have this argument. But yeah. He's trying to keep his heart rate up. Once he prioritizes his cardio.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So now are we ready to talk about next week's episode of?
We sure are.
Don't you hate to be continued on TV? I mean, the whole reason you watch a TV show is because it ends. If I wanted a long, boring story with no point to it, I have my life.
Go ahead.
All right, so next week, our episode will be called The Dream Scheme. And let us at least watch the trailer, get a few seconds hint of what's to come in The Dream Scheme.
Hey, we go for a walk. Oh, hi.
What the hell is this?
Some people care if he gets eaten by a coyote, Larry.
Is your outfit anti-coyote?
Very funny. Go fuck yourself.
I'm not going to be able to take this off of your bill tonight.
Why?
What you ate went past the threshold of returnability.
I took a robust bite, and then he took a bite.
And you take a large bite at that point?
You have to take a large bite. You can't confirm on a small bite.
Right.
You don't get enough taste.
Larry.
Do I know you?
I'm Stu's cousin from the family text chain.
Yeah, the text chain.
You think you're too good for the chain?
I think I'm too good for the chain. Every 2 minutes, it's ding. I'm getting a ding. I'm getting a ding. Too many dings.
Larry, turn off your notifications on your phone. All right, so we got a lot to chew on there. So Susie's dog is wearing a ridiculous outfit.
Yes.
And then we have... wait, I'm forgetting already the sequence of those scenes that we just watched. Then we're at the restaurant. Is that Moshe Kasher playing the waiter there?
I was not paying close enough attention.
Okay. Are either one of you familiar with Moshe Kasher, the comedian?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It didn't look like him. He is kind of tall and thin, but it sounded like him.
You think it was him, but even though it didn't look like him?
No, but it sounded like him.
Oh, okay.
You're going to have to check IMDb for that one, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't think it was him. And then when I saw his face, but then when I heard his voice, I'm like, that really sounds like Moshe Kasher. So, probably not. And who is Larry at the restaurant with? There's a young, attractive woman there.
I don't know.
All right. We'll have to find out that. And then Larry has one of his cousins. What is Stu's kid? Is that from the text chain or something like that?
Who's Stu?
I don't know. We know about cousin Andy, of course, right? Yeah. Richard Kind. That's really the only cousin of Larry's that we've ever met. So, but listen, we all have those family group chats where, you know, there's cousins who you haven't seen in 25 years who are getting involved in the chat. And Larry thinks he's too good for the chat. Do you think you're too good for the family chat, or are there other cousins who think that way?
There certainly are family chats that I'm in that I'm too good for.
Yeah.
I won't say that I'm too good for all of the family chats.
All right. Well, Hibson, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time. We love you, and I think you should leave. We love you here on Curb, of course. And tell us all, what else. Where should we be looking to see you next?
I've got actually a couple of projects in the works. I'm actually stunt coordinating a movie right now and a TV show at the same time, so that's kind of been keeping me busy this year. I was stunt doubling Randall Park on a movie that is not quite announced yet, so. Can't say too much about it, but it's going to be a great one. I think it's going to make a big splash. And also, right, I have
so
a short
if I
film.
See any movies where Randall Park does any good stunts, I'll credit you.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just got my own projects. I also write kind of that comedy background. I actually used to be a comedy writer for NBC's Diversity Showcase. So I have been writing for quite a while. So I've got a couple scripts in the works that I'm hopefully getting made, hopefully sometime soon.
Awesome.
All right. Sounds good. Well,
we'll look out for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And this podcast, if it continues for 4 weeks from now, we'll have to find new topics. So yeah, let us know how those new projects go, and we'll see. Ah, we only have four left. It's getting scary. It's getting how few there are. Ever since we got back to LA, it's just we've been on fire with strong episode after strong episode. And so hopefully these last four will also be.
Get a life, Jews.